Learn as much as you can. Talk to as many people as you can. Learn from their mistakes and their successes, and be vulnerable. I think that one of the things that I've learned about myself over time, that's one of my unique dispositions toward life that's allowed me to be successful, is vulnerability.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development. In our first season, we viewed the constellation of stories generated by Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program alumni creating positive impact in communities in New York. We explore how community-driven founders navigate the challenges of accessing the right resources at the right time, how they stay true to their respective missions, and how they best manage their potential. We welcome you as we hear tales of trials and successes, as well as valuable advice from our interviewee entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode one with Dan Zotterer of Grassroots Grocery. Dan, welcome to Communitas of New York. So great to have you on the show and talk about all the amazing things that you're doing at Grassroots Grocery. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So the way we like to do this is, first, I would love for the audience to get to know you a little bit and a little bit more about your venture. So if you could just tell us a little bit about Grassroots Grocery and what inspired you to start.
Sure. My name is Dan Zotterer, and I am the founder and CEO of Grassroots Grocery. And Grassroots Grocery is a movement of neighbors helping neighbors. And our purpose is to come together as a community in service every single weekend to bring fresh and healthy produce directly to neighbors in need, using a volunteer-powered, community-centered, tech-driven approach.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. So I love all the things, doing this frequently every single weekend, volunteer-powered, tech-driven, all the things. So what really inspired you to start?
It really was, it's not like you grow up wishing to be a nonprofit founder. I think that most founders kind of get into this by circumstance. Something happens in your life. And for me, I was a middle school teacher in the Bronx, and I had students and families who were dealing with lack of access to food. And that got really bad during the pandemic. And it just started with a realization that as a teacher, especially during times like the pandemic, but really always, but this kind of just crystallized it for me, that you can't just fill up kids' minds with knowledge. You know, the world doesn't work that way. You have to make sure that the kids that you're responsible for teaching are not just learning the material, but that they're also being treated as whole people, that they have all of the resources that they need to thrive, to the extent that you can do that in your role as a teacher. And so for me, during the pandemic, it really just became a passion project of mine to work on food access. And I started with just getting in touch with the needs of my community. So I speak Spanish. I'm lucky to speak Spanish. I worked at a bilingual Spanish-English charter school in the South Bronx, where I got to know my students and their families really well. And one of the things that I did early on is I sent out just a text message survey. And in that survey, I asked a question, and the question was, ever since the pandemic shut down the school building, have you ever had to cut down on a meal or skip a meal because you didn't have money to pay for food? That was the question. And I asked it in English and Spanish to about 88 students' families who were my sixth grade students. And I learned that one out of four of those families were cutting down on meals or skipping meals a few times every week. And that's really what got me motivated to do something about this issue. And it really just began there, though, with listening to and getting in touch with the needs of my students and their families.
That is such a beautiful story and so many things. And one of the amazing things about the work that you're doing is you have been getting people behind this cause. And I also saw that you have over 4,000 volunteers. So if you could just talk about how were you able to get people on board with this mission?
A lot of it is that people are amazing. it's honestly still a miracle to me that every Saturday hundreds of people were showing up in the parking lot to volunteer. For example, this coming Saturday, we have about 230 people signed up to join us in a parking lot. And this whole month of November, we're just bursting at the seams with people, so much so that we have to turn away volunteer groups now. Mm. We have to tell people to stop recruiting because we're just at capacity from a safety perspective. And so How did it happen? Well, it happened because I knew that to get food to community leaders who were able to get it to people, you couldn't do it with just the fleet of trucks, because you need so much money, but you also need logistics to be able to manage the truck route and to get, you know, I mean, what I guess to back up what I learned in my time is that there are all of these community leaders who have access to people in need and who have deep bonds of trust with people in need. But what they don't necessarily have is the resources to provide for their people in a sustainable way. And I figured that the only way to really bridge that gap was to use volunteers. And so I reached out. I reached out first to my community where I grew up. It's in the suburbs, not too far away, because I thought, well, you know, where can I find a lot of folks who want to do something good, who maybe have a big car to help us transport some food? And I thought, well, the suburbs is a good place. There are a lot of the stereotypical soccer mom and stuff, you know, live in the suburbs. And so I thought, well, where can I find people with minivans that want to do something on the weekend? And so I reached out to my local elementary school where I went to elementary school. I reached out to my synagogue where I had a bar mitzvah. And that's really where the first crowds came from. And then from there, it was just referrals. You know, people would say, my kid goes to a different school. Can we get that kid's school involved? Or I belong to, I'm a managing director in a company. Can we get my company involved? I'm a member of the junior league. Can we get them? And so just really is a spiral because people, when they come and volunteer with us, they really fall in love with it and they want to get their other friends and communities involved. And so they refer us to those communities and then we get those communities involved. And then those communities refer to other communities. I think the other really important point here for us is that we found an experience that resonates with families, with families of all ages. And so one of the things that we've learned is that families really want activities to participate in, especially for young kids. They really want their young kids to participate in something meaningful that connects them to the community. And yet a lot of opportunities are not accessible. And so that's the other thing that we did, is we created a super fun, family-friendly, but also accessible experience that just really meets people's needs. And so I think that's the other way that we've really cultivated an incredible community of volunteers. I think it's now actually over 5,000. Wow. And that's just in 2 years or so. It's just through reaching out to groups and getting referrals to new groups and creating an experience that makes people want to keep coming back. Like, yeah, yes, it's volunteering, but we don't see it as volunteering. We see it. We call it a produce party, what we do every Saturday. It's filled with music, high energy, lots of people, kids of all ages, people of all ages, people from all walks of life coming together as a community. To blast some music, sort some string beans, bag some okra, and nourish their neighbors.
Mm-hmm. That is so phenomenal. And I love that approach, the community building aspect, and also that way of doing it differently and getting people involved. So that's so beautiful. And in addition to, like you mentioned, the volunteers that you've had, you've been able to receive a multitude of sponsorships and are continuously growing. What have been the biggest milestone or success moments for Grassroots Grocery so far? And how has it helped shape the business?
Sure. I think that one was hitting $1 million in budget.
That's a big deal.
You know, Yeah, most nonprofits aren't lucky enough to get there, and we've just had incredible momentum from, you know, from corporate sponsors, from individual volunteers, from a few foundations, but mostly from companies that participate in volunteering with us and volunteers who give, whether it's through kind of peer-to-peer fundraising. Like, we have 11 runners in the marathon now, which is amazing. I just had a little happy hour with them yesterday to help send them off to the marathon that's coming up. So that was a big milestone. And I think the other was reaching over 1 million pounds of produce rescued and distributed. So last year in 2023, we rescued 1.3 million pounds of produce that would have otherwise gone to waste. Mm-hmm. And we got that produce distributed to between 1,200 and 1,500 households every single Saturday. And so that's another really big milestone, you know, I think that actually maybe our biggest milestone is still coming up. This coming Saturday will be our biggest ever produce party. And so that's another really big milestone. We have over 200 people and their families joining us. And so that's another incredible milestone to have reached in such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big deal. And in that milestone, I'm pretty sure there have been some challenges that you faced in this growth and expansion. So can you talk a little bit about what some of those challenges have been and what's keeping you going?
Yeah, I mean, every startup founder, I'm sure, has challenges. It's par for the course. And I think it's really about how you grow from those challenges. For example, you know, one challenge is as we grow, mm-hmm. how do we maintain a community focused approach? Because really at the heart of our work is neighbors helping neighbors, and it's bringing communities together, and it's hyper local community empowerment. And so how, as we grow from 1 million pounds to 10 million pounds of produce, for example, how can we ensure that everything stays rooted in neighbors helping neighbors and in community? And I think mm-hmm. that the answer for us is just thinking really intentionally about the way that we expand. And so, you know, I'll give you an example from the startup world. So if you think about Uber, for example, Uber is the largest transportation company, but it doesn't own a single taxi cab. Mm-hmm. And Airbnb is the largest hospitality company, but it doesn't own a single property for guests, right? These are just platforms that are connecting people with needs. And in the same way, we really envision Grassroots Grocery as a platform. And so in that, we don't want to ever expand our truck fleet. We don't want to inhabit a huge warehouse. Instead, we always want to stay distributed. So we want to, when we're growing, for example, we would rather pop up produce parties, the thing that we do on Saturday in the Bronx. We would rather pop those up all around the city mm-hmm. and keep volunteers moving to all these different locations and then having those volunteers fan out to more and more community partners. Instead of ever kind of centralizing and consolidating our approach, we want to keep it distributed. We want to keep it volunteer-based. So I think it's just being really intentional about the way you grow, making sure that whatever you do is rooted in your purpose as an organization. And for us, our purpose is really neighbors helping neighbors. And it's really about, you know, yes, it's about food access, mm-hmm. but it's really a dual mission because there's a lot of organizations that tackle food access. We are tackling food access specifically by cultivating a community of neighbors helping neighbors. And that's vital and indispensable to our approach. So I think that's one kind of challenge. And I think the other is just being really focused as you grow. Mm-hmm. And so for us, you know, we actually began in a completely different way than we ended up. So we began, you know, when I was a middle school teacher, we began with this concept of a community fridge. And I didn't invent this concept, but that was the way we started, was just by opening up a community fridge in the local community where I was a teacher. And that fridge amazingly is still around today. Right. And every Saturday we have a volunteer who brings produce to it, which mm-hmm. is amazing. And we have a local part-time staff member who keeps that fridge clean and keeps it, you know, keeps his eye on it. And he's amazing. We've been good friends since that fridge was first dropped off by a pickup truck, you know, 3 years ago. His name's Tino. He's on the block. You can meet him on 141st in St. Anne's. He'll be there, you know, keeping an mm-hmm. eye on the fridge. So that's the way that it started. But really now what we do is we really are focused on these produce parties and on growing the produce parties. And in that, we've had to make some really hard decisions. So yes, we have those fridges that we first started, but we're not looking to double down on or grow that program. And that was a decision that we had to make because we have limited staff mm-hmm. and we need to know where our value and core competency is so that we can grow in that way. In fact, I don't know if you've seen those Staples commercials that have the easy button. And when you click it, they say that was easy. So my COO, mm-hmm. Chief Operating and Technology Officer, who just joined us about 6 months ago, Jordan, as a welcome gift, he bought me a button that looks just like the easy button, but instead of saying easy on it, it says no on it. It's a giant no button. And it's funny that somebody when you hire who's supposed to help you grow and navigate challenges would buy you something that says no in really big letters on it. And his message to me, though, was that the only way that we're going to be able to grow this into what it needs to be is to say no to more things than you say yes to. Mm-hmm.
I love that. I'm encouraged to get me one now then.
yeah, you should. You can get them on Amazon. I got to ask Jordan for the link.
Yes, I love that. And another thing that you talked about is like the power of when you're facing these challenges and knowing your purpose and also knowing your value. And one of the things you also mentioned earlier was one of the reasons that you started. So you mentioned the fact that you were motivated about this issue that you're trying to solve. I would love it if you could kind of like elaborate on that a little bit more. What did that motivation look like? Because I know you spoke about being in the schools and seeing these things. So I want to talk more about that motivation.
So for me, I mean, there's one thing to talk about the motivation that got me started. Mm-hmm. And then there's another thing to talk about the motivation that keeps us sustained, you know, and that keeps us growing. And I think that those are similar, but also they grow and evolve. And so, I mean, the real motivation to begin this work was just confronting the need of my local school community. It was really that simple. It was also feeling like I was in a unique position to be able to do something about it. You know, I recognize that one of the things that I was so lucky to have is a community like that I'm from the suburbs. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a community surrounded by folks that were upper middle class. And, mm-hmm. and I think that I thought that I had a responsibility to get folks in that community involved in this work. And so, like I said, you know, I reached out to my elementary school. I went to school and I reached out to my synagogue and then it all grew from there. But it was being able to leverage, I guess, first it's recognizing the privilege that you have, you know, being really recognizing like, look, I am in a situation that most people mm-hmm. are not lucky to be born into. And also that was an accident because I was adopted at birth and from Waco, Texas, you know, and I would have had a totally different life had I not been mm-hmm. adopted. So I think from a very early age, I recognized the role that luck and privilege and all that plays in one's upbringing. And I think that, I guess, you know, that awareness really I think it gave me a sense of responsibility to look beyond my own bubble and to think instead about how I could be a bridge between, to be a connector, to be facilitating this vision. And now every Saturday I get to make a little stump speech and I get to I get to be kind of the figurehead of what I really feel is a movement just bridging communities and building bridges and creating bonds between neighbors that may have otherwise not had an opportunity to connect. And I feel strongly that over time, those bridges that we're building and those bonds that we're facilitating, especially for the kids that are doing this, you know, the kids that are driving out and dropping off produce with a community leader and getting to know those community leaders, because some of these community leaders that we work with, they receive the same families come and drop off produce to them week after week after week. And so I just think about the 10-year-olds and the 15-year-olds that are in that car interacting with that community leader that they would have never otherwise had an opportunity to interact with. And I'm excited about the possibilities that can unfold and emerge over time from creating that kind of connection. I know that, I mean, just recently, you know, a woman who was at a lunch that one of our donors put on, she was motivated to reach out to one of our community partners and ask about how she could provide books to that wow. community partner. And we have so many examples of yeah. that, of folks who start as volunteers with us, but then they get connected to our community leaders. And then they go on to work directly with our community leaders to make improvements in their own communities in partnership with them. And so I think that it's about, that's really, I guess that's the motivation is figuring out how I can be a connector and a bridge.
And also, one of the things you also spoke about was this shift in this new direction that you had to take. Mm-hmm. So you were focused on the community fridges, and now it's more so the produce parties. So I want to mm-hmm. talk about what drove that decision and enforced that pivot.
Yeah, so there were a couple of reasons. I think the biggest reason, though, was thinking through where our impact mm-hmm. is going to be the strongest, because, you know, our produce parties every Saturday, we're doing between 12 and 15,000 pounds of food. We're reaching between 25 and 32 communities. We are reaching between 12 and 1500 households every single Saturday. And that takes a lot of focus to be able to pull off. And especially, it's one thing to just keep doing that, right? If just keep doing that steady state and make the same impact every Saturday, which I know some nonprofits choose to do. You know, they choose to kind of stay at the size that they're at and make the impact that they're making with just mm-hmm. incremental growth in their budget. But we really have a vision to grow this. And the only way to grow, I even made a hashtag, say no to grow. and so that's really what it is. It's just about, you know, thinking through what are you best at? And what resources are you currently allocating to what you're best at, and then where can you shift other resources that are not matching up with that to align with what you're best at? And that means making tough calls, but it also mm-hmm. it's in service of the impact that we do. The other example of that is we had a weekday delivery program where we were using our truck to make deliveries to schools and things like that. And it was amazing to be able to provide, you know, produce to Title I schools and to other community centers and things like that during the week that weren't being served by anyone else. But doing that, we realized was a completely different mode of operating. So we had to use a paid driver. We had to use our truck. We had to deal with all of the things that come from managing the logistics around that. And it was something that our volunteers that come on Saturday were completely disconnected from. And yet it was taking our team a lot of time to manage. And so that's one of those really tough decisions where we had to come to partners and we had to say, look, we're really putting the brakes on this weekday program because we just don't have the capacity to do the weekday program and grow our produce parties and do them both well. And of course we invited them to join in some cases a waiting list where, you know, because we're hoping to grow the produce party, it's our real focus. And so as we grow, we said, look, we hope that you can still receive Saturday deliveries of produce from your community. So we hope that you get on this waiting list so that you can be a part of that. And that's a really tough thing to have to do to tell a community partner, look, you're not going to get food anymore on this weekday. But mm-hmm. at the same time, if making those decisions now allows our team to focus and grow the produce party, where instead of being able to move 15,000 pounds of produce on a Saturday, we're able to move 30,000 pounds of produce on a Saturday. And then we're able to do it in two locations and then four locations and then eight locations. And then, you know, exponential growth. Just think the impact in the long term is so much greater. And so I think that that's just something that, that you have to learn how to do as a founder. So yeah, I think I really love that hashtag. I got to use it more. Hashtag say no to grow.
Yeah. I wrote that down because I'm going to actually use that. I'll give you credit. And
you don't have to.
Shout out to Jordan. Did Jordan start that? Say no to grow.
Yeah. I don't know if he started the hashtag. I think that, I don't know how he came up with that, but he started the no button. That was his idea to give me that as a welcome gift. So
yeah, that's so dope. And I'm sure that was very challenging to make that decision. But like you mentioned, the growth and the impact long term, and for a lot of founders, that can be very hard. So what advice would you give to founders who are facing that need to pivot and how to approach it strategically?
I think that it's just about being responsive to what your purpose as an organization is. And over time, as you do different activities, right? Because at the beginning, you're just trying things out and you're thinking, all right, mm-hmm. why don't we throw things at the wall and see what sticks. But ultimately, that was kind of our early process of, you know, we were doing fridges and we were doing weekday delivery. We were doing produce parties, and we really found that people were coalescing around this produce party concept. And also that was most in line with what we were passionate about, which was using volunteers to and community building to bring food into neighborhoods. And so I think it's just a combination of those two things of knowing what your purpose is and then aligning the resources that you have with that purpose. You know, it's kind of this concept of a North Star is that, you know, as long as you know what your North Star is, you can stay focused on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's solid advice. And now what?
Not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. I know somebody's listening. They're like, oh, it's not easy. But you're an example of, you know, this is the evidence that it is possible. So love that. Now I want to shift gears into the fundraising and securing the grant. So how do you approach this process? Because you also talked about what most nonprofits aren't able to do is get that $1 million in budget. So for you, how do you approach the process of obtaining funding and grants?
So one thing that we've done is we created an amazing volunteer experience. And that's an experience that really resonates with communities. And in those communities are undoubtedly always going to be people that have resources. And we do a really good job of capturing the information of everybody who joins a produce party. And then we go out and we share about ways to partner with us to grow our impact. And so it's really about bringing people along for the journey of our work and inviting them to be a partner in growing it. You know, I mean, for a specific example, we, you know, on Saturday, we have a director of individual giving now, Adjua, who just joined us 3 months ago. And she, every Saturday, she looks at the list of the folks that are coming on Saturday. And then on Saturday, she mixes and mingles with folks. And then after Saturday, she sends out messages to everybody sharing about the work that they did and the impact that they made and offering them into a conversation, inviting them into a conversation about how they could partner with us to help us expand our impact. And so I think that that's a big piece of it, is making sure that you're cultivating the folks that are part of your journey and bringing them along with you and to expand your impact. And then I think the other is we got really creative with corporate volunteering, because one of the things that we learned is that many of the folks who were joining our produce party were people in corporate positions, and some of them in really senior leadership, and they wanted to be a part of our work. And so we came up with this really awesome corporate volunteering event called the Great Sandwich Race. And what that is we go into your conference room and we split you up into teams. We share the story of our work. We throw you into hairnets in an apron, and then you race against the clock to see which team can make the most sandwiches. And then we get those sandwiches delivered to the same partners that we're working with on Saturday using a courier network instead of volunteers. But for every time that we do that with a corporate partner, we're making between, you know, $10,000 and $30,000 sometimes. And just for one event. And so I think that, and the way that we get those relationships for the most part is through our Saturday produce party, because we share, we say, look, if you're in corporate America, come to talk to us. We also actually, one of my good friends who was working with me on some strategic advising and pro bono coaching. She's a corporate coach. Her name is Sherry Lyons. And she was a core volunteer for a long time, joining us every Saturday. Her daughter was an intern with us through Fordham, and that's how she learned about us. But she decided to make a big shift in her life, and in doing so, she joined AmeriCorps. There's this program called NYC Service, where AmeriCorps members can work with a nonprofit for a year. And so now Sherry is with us every Saturday, and also during the week making outreach. But every Saturday, she's there with us. And her speech on Saturday is all about corporate impact. And so we're lucky to get, we pay a small stipend to AmeriCorps to benefit from Sherry's expertise, but it's basically, it's very, very low cost for us. And she's an incredible volunteer who's with us during the weekend on the weekends to really think specifically and intentionally about how to grow our corporate volunteering efforts. And so that's the other thing, is just being creative about where your funding comes from. You know, this corporate volunteering thing we do, the Great Sandwich Race, is something that we basically just invented. And we learned that over time that it was really popular and powerful with our corporate partners. And so we figured out a way to double down on it. We brought on Sherry. And now we are hoping, after Sherry's tenure, because she's really tasked with growing the program, that we'll be able to hire a full-time person to continue on in her footsteps to take the ball where she left off, you know, to keep the ball rolling where she left off. So I hope that
provides something. Yes, it definitely did. And I love that approach, so strategic. And for somebody who's listening, you talk about when you approach corporations, this approach. And I want to kind of break it down for like the differences between how you approach corporate, schools, and individual volunteerings.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's all part of the same flywheel, right? So I think that that's one of the beauties of our work. And it all centers in as I shared, you know, our work really resonates with families. And so what happens is a family comes and volunteers on Saturday, and then we meet them and we learn about them. I think that's, you know, you have to listen to your people, right? That's a big thing that you got to do, is actually listen to what people are offering to you. And we learned that, you know, these families, they might send their kid to a school, or they might be a part of a religious community, or they might be in corporate America. And so from that, there are lots of different touch points that happen from that family coming together on a Saturday. Like, I just got an email actually right before I hopped on to hear, that said, hey, Dan, you know, I'm part of XYZ company, and my wife and daughter and I were there a few weekends ago. I'm volunteering at the produce party, and actually my wife and daughter loved it, and they're coming back again this weekend. But I also am reaching out because I'm part of a company and I want to learn about your corporate volunteering initiatives. And so it's really all part of the same flywheel. And it's about listening to what your volunteers can offer.
Certainly. And speaking of, so now I want to talk about the scaling and strategic growth. So when it comes to, if you had to say in short, how does your network operate and how have you scaled over time?
I think a lot of it is about building a team and bringing on the right people to grow your vision. You know, there was no way I could have done this alone. So one of the things that we did was we hired a chief operating and technology officer about 6 months ago, Jordan, who has a background in scaling companies. And so he, you know, the last company that he worked with as chief strategy officer, he grew the company from a company that had about 5 employees to a company that had over 100 and then got bought out by Cisco. And he comes with that orientation towards scale and growth. And then we also hired a seasoned fundraising professional, Adjua, who was at John Jay for 5 years doing frontline fundraiser before she joined us, and is now kind of part of that, you know, executive team that's really thinking strategically about how we grow. And then it's also about having boots on the ground, you know, doing your day-to-day work. And we have two amazing employees, Alex and Julia, who are with us every day, who are just executing the day-to-day operation. And we are always thinking about how do we make it more efficient? How do we grow our team intentionally? And we actually just developed a strategic plan as a group, and we're really coalescing around that now and crystallizing around the vision for that. Cause I think that that's the other big thing is you got to stay big, and you have to think to yourself, where am I going to be in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And build out as big a vision as you can. And then think backwards into that vision. Because if you're just thinking incrementally, you have the real danger of just fizzling out. You know, like I was talking to a chief revenue officer at a big nonprofit, and he shared with me that one of the deaths of your organization is going to be thinking in an incremental way, like, oh, how can we get our budget to be just 10% more than it was last year? You can't think just incrementally, because it prevents you from really articulating the possible vision that you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And right, if you're only thinking, okay, how can we grow our budget by 10%, then you're missing out on those big ideas that will really fuel your growth, and they will also bring your donors and your volunteers and your partners along with you in that journey.
Yeah, definitely. And I like that thinking, you know, continuously thinking big. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
what are the big bets? You know, thinking through big bets, like what's the big bet that you're going to make on your organization? And you got to go really big, you know, like let's think in 5 years, how can we have, you know, we haven't picked a number yet, but we want to be at multiple produce parties throughout the city in 5 years. So how are we going to get there?
Mm-hmm. And I'm loving this conversation on Communitas of New York. And so I want to talk mm-hmm. about the role of Communitas in your business journey. So how has being a part of Communitas community helped you in your journey as an entrepreneur, you would say?
One is being a part of Hayground. Mm-hmm. We love being a part of the co-working space at Hayground Harlem, because it's a collaborative space with other social impact entrepreneurs who are all passionate about the work that they do, have really interesting and unique connections with the community. And they provide us with inspiration and a sense of community in this incubator space. And they also provide us with tangible opportunities to have partnerships. Like, so for example, you know, Danny at Lulo, which is focused on kind of benefits access through WIC. She and our team, are collaborating on a series of pop-up food distributions where we're bringing our volunteers on a Saturday are bringing food to her team. And then her team is simultaneously providing the food, but then also enrolling people in WIC. And that's an opportunity that came directly out of, you know, being in that incubator space, because we met there and we shared about our work and explored the synergies. And so that's just one example. But yeah, it's just about being in a community where everybody is focused on positive change and is thinking through things with a lens toward scale and toward innovation. Mm-hmm. And I think that the other very exciting thing that Communitas provides is also an opportunity for us to give back. So yeah. We have participated in a couple workshops and panels where we're able to share about our journey with other aspiring entrepreneurs. And that's something that keeps us grounded and that keeps us centered and that keeps us inspired and motivated, is being able to share that story with others. Even this opportunity right now, being on this podcast, every time that I speak about my own experience and our own journey as an organization, something new crystallizes for me. And I'm able to then take that home and incorporate that into our mission and our vision. And I think, I mean, the other thing is that Hayground is, I mean, we have our staff there two or three times a week, and just being able to have that space is another incredible opportunity that Hayground provides.
Yeah. So good. And yeah, thankful for Communitas. And that is such a great collaboration with you and Lulo and Danny. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
that's dope. And you both are like people who like go for it. So I am, I know it's just going to be so big. So, yeah. And then you were also at a recent speaker session for Communitas Ventures Cohort 13. And mm-hmm. it was featuring Grassroots Groceries. And you noted the popular quote commonly attributed to Wayne Gretzky on, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take." Now, how do you keep well organized so that you can continue to take as many shots as possible?
I'm lucky that that's kind of in my nature.
Yes.
Is the first thing. You know, I am just, I was born with a lot of energy. And I really get a lot of my energy from making those shots, and you can't make them unless you take them. And so that's the first thing, is that I'm just lucky to have that disposition and that orientation. But then it's also about growing out a team who's able to do everything else. And so the more that I can focus only on building relationships and having collaborations and motivating and inspiring people and bringing them along in this incredible journey of neighbors helping neighbors that we're building, the more that I can focus on that and less on administrative stuff or operations related tasks, the more that we can set ourselves up for success. And so it's about hiring team members and bringing on people who are able to do the things that you can't and that allow you to maximize your time doing the things that you're uniquely situated to be able to do.
Yes, certainly. And then you have dropped bars all this this entire conversation. So you can't make them unless you take them. I like that. I wrote that down too. Do you work directly with government agencies, or do you have any future plans to do so?
We do work with a lot of local mm-hmm. NYCHA developments. And so we work every NYCHA development, New York City Housing Authority, every development has its own residents or tenants association. And in that association is leadership. So there's a president, a vice president, and a secretary. And so many of our Saturday deliveries that our volunteers are doing at Produce are deliveries that are going right to tenant associations and residents associations and New York City Housing Authority developments. And so in that way, yes, we work with NYCHA, but we don't really work with, you know, the central body of NYCHA. And we don't collaborate with them directly. We have spoken with them, but we don't collaborate with them directly. Mm-hmm. We do... we're lucky to have received city council discretionary funding every year mm-hmm. and from lots of different city council offices. And so that's another thing that we've done is we've definitely worked with the city council because, you know, every Saturday our volunteers are delivering produce to so many different communities, and all of those communities are in different city council districts. And so we've reached out to city council members and solidified partnerships with them. So that's been really meaningful. And yeah, I mean, I think that the challenge with larger government grants and institutional partnerships like those is that they often require very specific data points mm-hmm. and very specific stipulations around the use of funds. And the thing with us is that, you know, we've pivoted so many times and we don't want to be in a situation where we have to use funds for a very specific purpose mm-hmm. because it might be that those funds are better used somewhere else. And so the challenge with, and the other challenge with government funding is being, you know, being really clear about your budgeting and in a way, I mean, we have clear budgeting, but what I mean is restricted, you know, that you have to create a whole, you have to really change up the way that you're doing your budgeting to make sure that restricted dollars are accounted for. And that takes a lot of time and effort from an accounting team. And right now we have an outsourced accounting team. And that's one of the ways that we've been able to stay lean. And, you know, we haven't had to bring on an internal kind of accountant and controller yet. But I think that if we were to get into government grants and other restricted funding opportunities, that we would have to explore how to, you know, bring that function in-house. Mm-hmm. And I think that the other thing is just, again, thinking through where you've been successful and had to double down on that success. And we've been so successful with individual giving, whether it's peer-to-peer or whether it's major gifts from individuals that are passionate about our cause, or whether it's this corporate. I mean, this corporate vertical that we just the sandwich race stuff that I talked about earlier, that's blown up this year. You know, we'll be at almost $500,000 in revenue by the end of the year just from corporate volunteering. And so that's already proven to be successful. And we have a lot of thoughts on how we can grow that. And the same is true for individual giving. We already have thoughts on how we can grow our individual giving. And so those two areas, individual giving and corporate giving, are likely going to be the focus of the next few years because we know how to be successful in those. But yes, I also think that over time, we will definitely, you know, to get from $1 million to $10 million in budget, for example, we'll have to shift to multi-year support ask, and we'll have to shift into more foundational conversations and think through government support. And so that'll definitely be a part of our journey. But again, you know, in this startup phase, I think it's really important, again, to say no to growth. So to say no for some of those opportunities for now, knowing that no is just no for now. Yeah. And so no is never no forever. It's just that right now, this is not the best fit, but knowing that things could change over time to allow for that to be reexamined. And so that's the other thing, is just, you know, saying no now to allow us to focus on what we do best, but knowing that over time it might evolve.
Yeah, certainly. And I love that approach and doubling down, as you mentioned. And being that you mentioned the fact of doubling down on what's working in this, what have been the greatest challenges that you face in reaching these end beneficiaries?
I think that the biggest challenge is actually not in reaching end beneficiaries, but rather in learning as much as we can about the end beneficiary. And the reason for that is because our approach really leans on our community partners, because we have a deep-seated belief that leaders who are closest to neighbors in need are best able to provide for their needs. And that means that we're at somewhat of a distance from the end recipient, because, you know, our volunteers drop off food with the community leaders and sometimes stay to help give out the food, but if they want to, but it's really our community leader partners who are then providing that food directly to people in need. And so that way we're really just a bridge and a platform. And over time, one of the things in our strategic plan, for example, is to hire a grassroots grocer. That's the word that we use for our community partners. It's just a term of endearment. They're grassroots grocers because we're grassroots grocery. And so they're our community partners. And so one of the things we want to do over time is hire a grassroots grocer community manager whose role will be to interact on a daily basis with our grassroots grocers to learn more about their needs and to learn more about the people that they're serving and to get more elaborate data on the end user. And so I think that the biggest struggle has been not in reaching the end user. You know, every Saturday we're reaching, I mean, it really depends. We don't have an exact average, but the last couple of Saturdays were over 1300 households in just one morning. But it's that visibility piece, is how can we learn about what's happening with those families and beneficiaries after they're receiving the produce? What does that look like for them? How is it improving their lives? How is that consistency and reliability in their community to the freshest, healthiest, oftentimes most expensive produce that they're receiving for free? How is that then impacting their lives and their communities? And that's something that we really want more insight on as we grow. And so making some hires around working directly with our grassroots grocer community partners is going to be what I think unlocks those insights for us, which will then be really powerful and be able to be used for, you know, for helping us grow our work, because we'll be able to communicate it more effectively to our partners.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And finally, Dan, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are passionate about making an impact in the realm of food justice specifically, and specific to their community or end beneficiaries, but they're just starting out?
Learn as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Talk to as many people as you can. Learn from their mistakes and their successes, and be vulnerable. I think that one of the things that I've learned about myself over time, that's one of my unique dispositions toward life that's allowed me to be successful, is vulnerability. I am kind of an open book with my struggles and my challenges. Mm-hmm. I ask for a lot of help. and I know that I cannot do this alone, and that I need a talented group of folks who will be able to propel our mission. And so I think it's a combination of vulnerability and humility that really will help unlock your growth. So have, you know, as many meetings as you can with as many people as you can who can help shape your perspective and your knowledge on the issues that you're tackling. Because however much you think you know, there's so much more that you don't know, and there's so much more that you'll learn from interacting with incredible people. But, you know, in the early days, after every volunteer event, I would text every single volunteer and ask them about their experience. And if they responded to me, I would set up a Zoom call with them to learn more about their experience with our work. And because I knew that we were creating a volunteer experience, and then without repeat volunteers who, you know, wanted to refer their companies and their communities and their schools, we wouldn't be able to sustain the work. And so I spoke to as many volunteers as humanly possible to make sure that we could sustain that part of our work. And so, yeah, just talk to as many people as you can who are in a position to be able to help you understand how to grow.
That is solid and great advice. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
This has been such a fruitful conversation. Yeah, people are going to want to know, how can they find you? How can they support you? And how can they work with you? So please do share.
So the best way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. I'm just Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, Zauderer, Z like zebra, A-U-D like David, E-R-E-R. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Follow our company page on LinkedIn. Also follow us on Instagram. We are Grassroots Grocery NY. And then finally, join us for a produce party. Come out to the Bronx on a Saturday morning. We are there every single Saturday. And you can do that by going to our website, hop on to grassrootsgrocery.org and click on volunteer and join us for a Saturday produce party. We will see you in the Bronx. We'll have our music blasting and we'll be bagging string beans or okra or something like that. And then if you have a vehicle, you can take that produce and bring it directly to one of our community partners. And if you don't have a vehicle, you can help us load that produce up into the folks who do have vehicles and make sure that, you know, that 30 plus communities are getting nourished that day.
Perfect. Dan, thank you so much for being on Communitas of New York.
Thank you. Thank you. This was a pleasure.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 1 is produced by Simone John and David Michael D. Gregoria.